This week on RSVNB Update, daily challenges are updated again, introducing reasons to be excited and worried. We also touch on Premier Club, the Golden Party Hat, and 2022's Old School Influence. Then we're back for Death Goss Round 2, this time with the high-end PVM perspective. This is RSVNB Update, episode 856, recorded Thursday, November 18th, 2021. Glorious Gravestones. Hello, everybody, and thank you for joining us for another episode of RSBNB Update. Tanis is here this week, as you are each and every week.
Thank you, Shane.
Also joining us this week is David, one of our resident PVM experts. You have done so much PVM back in the day, and even now, that you have quite the impressive rap list, don't you?
Yeah, I was definitely at my peak in 2017-ish, but I still do a lot of PVM.
What was it you told me? You did. You were one of the first to do Hard Mode Duo and Trio Virago.
Yeah, back when people were figuring out how to do Trio Hard Mode.
The other one that really piqued my eyebrows was you said you did your entirety of your Yakumaru feats in one kill. And was that with no food or was that something else?
Yeah, we did, just for fun, we did the whole Daredevil title in one raid with no food.
And this was this before or after you iced your wrists?
I didn't have to ice my wrists for that. The time I had to ice my wrists was next AOD release, because I played maybe 70 hours of AOD on release the first week, maybe more, maybe like 80 hours. And that was back in the continuous Fortec auto attack days. So there was an enormous amount of action per minute that really, really hurt.
Well, that's the definition. That's the definition of sweaty PVM. And I will never, I better not say never. I said I would never be doing, you know, almost daily reapers. But lo and behold, that's the level of PVM we're talking about here. And I thought it would be important to have you on the show this week to have a discussion on death cost, because Tanis and I touched on it last week, particularly from the economic side of it, but we didn't touch on the system side. And we had a roundtable this past weekend with our Patreon supporters as well. And that yielded about a 45-minute discussion on death costs in particular, back and forth with all levels of PVM or all levels of people. We were all here for that. So we're going to talk a bit about that after. But of course, we have everything else in the podcast this week. How are you feeling this week, Tanis, about daily challenges?
Looks like a nice change.
All right. We're going to step right in. I am Shane12088. He is Tanis79. And David can be found in game at Cabri. I can never keep track of the name of your Iron Man, but feel free to drop that in here right now if you want.
Yeah, it'll be the same for a really long time now. I've settled on Ikalgo.
All right. Fair enough.
The squid from the anime Hunter x Hunter.
Oh, okay. Well, if you guys want to follow along with our show notes, you can find those at update.rsbnb.com. All right, so the daily challenges, and it feels like we just got the daily challenge rework, but we got another daily challenge update this week. This is from Mod Stew and the Core Experience team. In particular with this, you now get 3 daily challenges each day. They change every day. Completing a daily challenge will award a large lamp's worth of XP. Previously, it was huge. But now you can get 3 per day. And this means that, you know, if you were on a Dungeoneering kick for some reason and you wanted to, you could re-roll all of your daily challenges to Dungeoneering challenges and get 3 of those lamps. So that'd be 1.5 times the XP that you used to get. Also, Vizwax or Weezwax, as Montstu was calling it. Did you guys catch that on the stream?
No,
okay. I've never heard that in my life, though.
I know. And Mod Hooli was absolutely losing it in the stream, trying to keep a straight face every time Stu would say that. And I think it probably had something to do with the way the chat was going. as well, but they rebalance the cost of using Vizwangs. It now only costs 10 to re-roll the daily challenge. Previously, it was 25, and you can re-roll as many times as you want. And extending a challenge now only costs 30, down from 50, and it will also update your or give you double weekly progress points. And a whole bunch of other daily challenges have been made a lot easier to complete as well. So we'll go into the weekly challenges in just a moment, but based on these top level changes here, how do you guys feel about this? You first, Tanis.
I mean, it's a little more XP in the long run. It's a little more flexibility as well. So that's nice. I almost feel though like I kind of miss the days of just the huge, you know, the huge lamp and the daily dunge, because that got me 120.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you know, I think when it comes down to it, at the end of the day, this is right now, this feels really good. This feels really good to me in terms of just streamlining the system. How do you feel about it, David?
I think it's fine. It's definitely a double-edged sword in some ways for people who only want to use their daily challenges for one skill. They now have to spend these wax in order to reroll to get that challenge. Like, if you just want Herblore XP, which is what most Ironmen do, because, well, it's changed with Godward's Engine 3, of course, but, you know, that's still one of the harder skills for Ironmen.
Yeah.
But overall, it seems pretty good.
Yeah.
It's like very easy to understand. It's easy to understand, which is good. I think sometimes we've gone in the direction of overcomplicating things.
Yeah.
I like that this is simple.
Yeah. I'm going to go through some of the changes that made challenges easier. So starting off, agility is to complete 2 full laps of any course. Previously, it was 5. Archaeology, you used to have to restore an artifact. Now you can restore or excavate an artifact. Combat, kill 15 enemies. It was 5. So that one went up, but I mean, it's really not that hard to do 15 enemies for any combat skill. Construction, construct 5 normal or flat-packed furniture pieces. Really simple. Cooking, prepare 10 dishes of food. Previously was 25. There's 3 crafting challenges. The first one is to create 5 jewelry pieces, fire 10 urns, or craft 5 pieces of equipment. Divination is down from 25 to 10. Convert 10 of any type of divination memory. That's a real simple one.
Yeah.
That's one load. Dungeoneering, complete any Daemonheim floor. Previously, it has to be at max complexity. Now it's at any complexity of any size.
Oh.
Yeah.
Snap.
So you could do a C1 small if you wanted to.
Mm-hmm.
Shifting tombs and elite dungeons are also there as well. Farming, check the health of a farming patch or gather all the produce from an allotment, herb patch or hops patch, or a farm animal. This no longer requires the animal to be an elder. Once again, for some of the higher level animals, that can take a long time. Fire making, light any 10 logs or add them to bonfires, previously 25. Fishing is down to 14 from 25. Fletching, fletch any type of arrow or arrow shaft, 60 of them. It was 150. It had to be full arrows, no shafts allowed. And
these are going to be a lot quicker.
Yeah.
Too.
Fletching too. Fletch any type of bow, 12 down from 25. Herblore, brew any 2 types of potions or brew any 2 types of potions was 10.
That's a great one. That's a money saver, too.
Yeah. Another one for Herblore. Clean 6 of any grimy herb.
Oh, nice.
Hunter. Farm run.
Less than a patch.
Yeah. One farm run. Hunter, skin 1 big game hunter creature, catch 3 creatures was 25? 3 only? Wow.
Yeah.
Mining, mine 5 ore. Prayer, offer 10 bones or ashes. Rune crafting. Craft 20 essence into any type of rune was 25. Or siphon 8 of any type of rune from the rune span. That was 25 as well.
You know what this is, Shane?
What's that?
Mobile friendly.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. And you're going to see why they're doing this in just a moment. Slayer is down to 10 from 25. Smithing. Create or upgrade a piece of equipment using core smithing materials. Was previously 2 pieces of equipment. Summoning is down to 3 pouches. Thieving is to pickpocket any target or loot any artifacts in Pyramid Plunder 6 times. Was 25. Woodcutting. Chop any 10 logs. Was 25. And they've also revised basic versions of daily objectives for new players and removed the daily challenge achievement path, since daily challenges are now onboarded within the challenge interface via several sets of basic challenges, and replaced copper and tin rocks at the depth of the Burthorpe mine with common gem rocks, silver, and iron rocks for use in basic challenges, and to telegraph low-level smithing and crafting progression goals in the starting zone. That's really good.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the reason they're doing this, there's also the weekly path with this, the weekly challenges, because every time you complete a weekly challenge, you get a weekly challenge point. You get 3 challenges a day. There's 21 points in total you get to need to complete the entire week's track. And I said track because that's exactly what this is. This is basically a mini weekly yak track, given based off of daily challenges. And rewards from these, they say, include anything from Silverhawk down and dungeoneering tokens up to a cash bag, death touch dart, or gift for the Reaper as some examples. And there's also now skip tokens, so you can skip a daily challenge and still get the XP for that skill. So, for example, in this week's weekly progress track on the free track for free-to-play players, there are 3 skip tokens available. So that means by completing these challenges, if I wanted to next week, I could just skip 3 daily slayers and effectively get what amounts to a large slayer lamp 3 times with that. And get all the progress for it. Other things on this week's track include 250 oddments in total. A weekly reset, a death touch dart, aura resets, a large cash bag, a box of clues, some dungeoneering tokens, amongst other things. And this is what these are going to look like generally week by week. And, you know, I have to say, for the 4 days since this has come out, I've done all 3 of my daily challenges each day. And it's even got me thinking after the podcast and after Discovery is done tonight, that maybe I need to go and do a bit of a Slayer task to complete the Slayer challenge for the day.
Yeah. You know, I only have one gripe, and that's the skip tokens. It makes sense on a yak track. It doesn't make sense on a daily challenge system. A weekly challenge that's based off daily challenges. That's my only gripe about it.
I think that the skips are wonderful for Iron Man.
Yeah, and also, none of these things take longer than 2 to 3 minutes. So
yeah,
I don't like. It's not like the skips are that helpful, really.
They're basically large lamps for whatever is on the docket for the day, I think. But I can see what you say about how it kind of separates it from actually doing that task and just makes it so it's just one click.
Yeah.
Okay. I think that's it's a fair argument.
You don't have to like do any of it, you know.
Okay.
And the purpose like for having those skips on Yak Track is it's such a long and diverse path where you really could get some tasks that are just ugh, you don't want to do it, or it's too expensive, or whatever reason.
Yeah, that's understandable. There was also the There was also the question of burnout raised from this, and this was written by Sirion in an Informer article. And, you know, I think it goes without saying that what is the whole point of a weekly track system? If you boil it down to its core.
To give us free stuff?
Engagement.
Well, engagement. In that you're going to feel like, oh, it's reset time. I have to log in and do these three daily challenges. And it does help you in terms of getting to your goal. But he puts it out in such a wonderful way that he says, and I'm just going to quote from the article here. You guys can read the rest at informer.rsbnb.com. He says, daily challenges can also be dangerous. Instead of giving you a goal when you want to play, completing daily challenges every day can be the goal for logging in by itself. This is how players can quickly burn out on a game. In the old daily challenge system, if you missed a day, you worked a bit harder the next day to catch up. In the new system, that still works, unless it happens to be a Tuesday, but it's going to cost you VizWax. So you better log in every day if you want to get all the rewards on that weekly track. And that's the one huge downside of this. And he closes by saying, I hope that Jagex does not close the door on improvements to this system. Choice and flexibility isn't a bad thing, but it is important to look at the long-term damage you are doing by altering the player's behaviors instead of mercilessly driving up short-term metrics. The timing of this update, right after 4 months of high-octane content releases, seems like it may not entirely be a coincidence, but what is gained by pushing players even deeper into looming RuneScape burnout? We should always remember player retention and long-term business success is a marathon and not a sprint. So while this feels...
That's a great point.
That feels...
It does turn it into a chore.
Yeah, and that's the thing. This system feels wonderful on the top, and I am engaging with it, and I really do like it. But everybody just needs to remember at the end of the day that as appealing as these things can be, you need to remember that you should not burn yourself out on this game.
No, I mean, honestly, though, I think that was a... So that's a problem that pre-existed this system, in my opinion.
Oh, yeah, with DailyScape, right?
Yeah. So, I mean, this... It's still guilty of the same of the same thing. Only it's improved on the other end of it, you know.
Yeah, yeah. And you know, it feels as though it fits directly into the scheme of mobile gameplay, which is another thing you mentioned when we were starting off here. So mm-hmm. There's that too. But overall, I think the execution is absolutely flawless on this by Mod Stu and team. I asked around in the friends chat and the clan chat, and the average rating of this update seems to be about a 3 out of 5, mainly for this idea that it creates the sense that if you don't do it, you're gonna miss out, and it perpetuates the whole DailyScape thing even harder. So that would be the number one thing that I think, if you were looking for a negative in this, would be that one to pull out. I think my last thing on this is that it uses the new TrueType font system, so it actually looks wonderful on mobile and on the desktop client scaled up as well. So there's that.
Nice.
All right. Let's move on to the next bit of news this week. Because, you know, it wouldn't be a November without Premier Club. Premier Club 2022 was announced this week, and they are highlighting what you get with this. Every year you get a new set of cosmetic rewards, including the Dawnforged armor set and the Dawnforged greatsword, as well as Soul of the Unicorn. You also get the usual 150k loyalty points, 3 Premier Club reward tokens, and all the VIP benefits that we've had for previous years, like Premier Vault, Boss Instance, 100 Bank Spaces, Premier Artifact, 1 daily key extra for every time you're a Premier Club member, 50% Rune Metrics discount, VIP Worlds, Premier Yak Track, 12 monthly drops at the start of each month that we had last year, and this is a new one. Anybody who is a Premier Club member will get 1 month of double daily keys, and this is active from the moment of purchase. So rather than three, you're going to get six.
Yay.
So just if you're interested in keys, that's another thing you can pull together with that.
Tell you what, I've been eyeballing this unicorn the whole show here going, man, what? Where did that come from? That looks pretty sharp. I like that.
Yeah, and it's got that same golden kind of texture on it too, eh?
Yeah. So now I'm definitely getting Premier. I mean, I'm pretty sure I was anyway, but got to get it for the unicorn.
You also get with it a shard for the golden party hat, which we'll talk about after this.
I definitely don't like the double keys thing because...
Yeah, I feel I like that's a bit excessive. I just think
that's a bad way to
create
this kind of package.
Yeah, and I mean, I'm clearly reaping the benefits from it. Today I reset, I got 10 huge prismatic lamps because of that.
Yeah. It's not so much the extra XP, it's just that the fact that it's only 1 month, you know, and promos are so good now, people get used to those extra keys, and once you're one
and they
want to
buy more, David, more.
Yeah, more. I mean, it's clearly just the whole concept of free samples resulting in
people hey, the first hit buying the free thing. Man.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh boy!
After a month, when your free XP gets cut in half, you'll have to find some way to replenish your lost keys.
So, it's actually a really good price in terms of if we're just looking at actual value here. The only reason to not get Premier Club, and I'm working in US dollars right now, is if you're on the $5 a month plan and you don't like Yak Track. That's the only reason to not get Premier Club, is if you don't intend on doing the Yak Tracks and you're on the grandfathered $5 a month plan. That's the only reason to not get it. Because splitting it out month to month, it comes out to $583 a month. So there is no reason to not get it unless you don't like Yak Track. The same prices for the UK amounts to £4.16 a month. Canadian, it's a little bit more, amounts up to $7.92 a month, so you might have a bit of a different discussion there, depending on how you want to split things with that. And in terms of euros, it's 65 euros for the entire 12-month package, which is $542 again. So once again, unless you're on the cheapest of packages, it's the deal to take. The 20 bond value is also there as well. Which currently, if you believe the GE prices, though they are in flux, that's about 855 mil in bonds.
Dude, that's nothing for one of these high rollers.
Yeah, I mean, we had some fun discussion about that in pre-show, but I don't exactly want to talk about that kind of gambling that people, you know, did on that for Premier Clubs in the past. But if we're comparing this to 2021 prices, this is... apparently $20 cheaper for the Americans than last year.
And, well, they know we're having a hard time, you know.
And $15 more expensive for Canadians this year. I'm not exactly sure.
Well, that's
what
you get for having healthcare, Shane. Sorry.
It's more about the currency and whatnot. But that's a topic for a different day. I think it was because we had the 20-year discount last year. I think that's what that was. So that's probably what was happening on that.
Okay.
Yeah, because remember there was a huge discount if you bought it early on last year?
I think so. I mean, if you say so. Yeah. I got mine through other means.
Yeah. People who were locked out by the login lockout, you get a discounted rate for purchasing. And if you aren't seeing that, contact customer support. I don't exactly know what the login lockout rate is on that, but
it's 15 bonds.
Oh, so it's $5 cheaper. Fascinating. Yeah. Interesting. Oh, so they... Oh, right. It says right here they will just replace it by bonds. So that's 25% off.
Yeah, all the people I know who got locked out are very nervous that when Jagex gives them their five, they're going to take half the bank compensation, maybe lock them out for a couple weeks just for fun.
Oh god.
For memory's sake.
Oh boy.
Then they're going to impose a billionaire's tax. Take all their diet items.
Just remove the dyes from all their dyed items.
Oh, yeah.
Or better yet, replace all their shadow, ice, blood, third age dyes with Barrow's dyes.
Oh.
That's really how you get them.
Hey, you can purchase this on Steam as well.
Premier Club?
Yeah.
Oh, hell yeah.
Yeah. It's purchasable by Steam. I don't know what exactly... what the Steam cost is, but it's 100% purchasable through Steam as well.
Sweet. Okay. Yeah.
So it makes sense.
I like to show love that way sometimes.
Yeah, yeah. It shows that there's engagement happening on Steam, right?
Yeah.
So that's good. That's good. All right, and you know we did of course mention that alongside this, there's this thing called the Golden Party Hat that's happening, and you get a shard with your Premier Club package, but as part of the culmination of the 20th anniversary event concluding last Friday, they announced that starting on November 22nd, players will be able to collect shards to make a golden party hat. You'll need to collect 8 of them, and it ends on January 3rd, and there's 11 possibilities in terms of where you can get the shards from. The shards are not going to be tradable, but the party hat, once complete, will be tradable like any of the other rare items that we have in game. You guys going for this?
Yeah, may as well. It could be valuable one day. Even if it's not that hard to get, it seems like.
Yeah, I don't think it'll be that hard.
Tennis? We'll see. I mean, maybe. It just depends on how much effort I gotta put into it.
Well, let's talk about how you can get it. You'll get a shard by talking to the wise old man outside the Grand Exchange in Varrock.
Easy enough.
You'll get a shard for completing the Once Upon a Time in Gielinor anniversary quest. The final part's coming next week. So that's 2. Every time you earn a mark of war, there's a chance to earn a shard. Every time you complete a clue scroll, there's a chance to earn a shard. One of the shards can be earned when you train combat skills, or when you train gathering skills, or when you train artisan skills or support skills. So there's 4 methods through skill training right there.
Oh, all right.
And there will be bad luck mitigation on these. So if you don't get them after a certain amount of time, you will just get the shard delivered to you. And they said that they don't expect you to spend huge amounts of time in effect grinding for these. I think what Mott Osborne said is that he expects people to be getting about 1 to 2 shards a night from skilling.
Okay, how many of these do we need?
8.
And I can get them through skilling?
Yes, you can get 4 of them through skilling. Then. Another shard will be obtained at level 15 on the free track of the Christmas Yak track. Another one can be purchased with 30 million gold, and the final one comes from the Premier Club.
Yep, okay. So that doesn't sound hard at all.
So by my count, there's 5 of them that are really easy to get, them being the wise old man one, completing the quest, level 15 Yak Track, 30 million GP. That's going to be the last one I do if needed, and the Premier Club one. So for people who don't want to spend the GP, there's 4 of them that are really easy to get, and you can just get the other 4 from skilling if you want to.
And Marks of War is from... time spent in a boss, right?
Yes, I think it's 1,000 marks of war per hour maximum.
So, I mean, that's 1,000.
And you get it for each
1,000
kill.
Rolls for an hour?
Uh-huh.
Pretty good. Yeah.
And, I mean, you get those marks of war really quickly if you do some of the bigger bosses out there.
Mm-hmm.
So, depends what you're doing for your PVM.
Yeah, or you can just AFK KBD.
Yeah, there's that too. Glacier is another really easy one to AFK with no mechanics.
Yep.
So I think that this is going to be relatively simple to get in terms of how everything is laid out. It's just going to be, you know, not handed to people as it was handed 20 years ago. And we have not seen what the in-game model looks like, but we have been told that this isn't the death of the yellow party hat. I'm assuming there will be a golden texture on it, kind of like how we have the golden texture of the unicorn pet and the money tree. And they said that if you, you know, remove all the reflectivity on it, it kind of comes out to be orange at the end of the day rather than gold. So it's not going to look like any of the other party hats we have in game. So people who have existing rares don't need to fret about that. And, you know, when it comes to rarity on this case, I was told that back in the day when the Black Santa hat came out, that, oh, this will be just, this won't go up in value like any of the other rares in game that we have, but we know how much Black Santa hats are going for these days.
But they were actually, they were still actual rares, right? They came through drops, essentially.
Yeah, they came they came through a Christmas cracker, though I don't know if they were stupid rare or not.
Well, they were rare enough. It's not like every person could do it. Every account.
Oh my god. Apparently they had a 1 in 2,000 drop rate.
Yeah, they're pretty rare. any discontinued item always goes up over time. Like, if you look at the Christmas scythe is a really good example, or the Christmas tree cape.
Yeah.
You know, they're super high in value, like 3-4 bill.
Oh, that's funny. I'm sorry, I shouldn't be laughing about that. The Christmas tree cape? I thought that was a... Oh, you're talking about the token, or?
Yeah, whatever it's called.
I have the I unlocked the Christmas tree cape. Oh, okay, interesting.
The scythe is like 3.5 bill. The Christmas tree hat. That's what I was
saying. Oh, okay. Christmas tree hat. But
yeah. Oh, that's only about 300 mil. But even still, that's, you know, that's not nothing.
No, it's not. It's not. And I feel like I have a duty to keep collecting these since I have most of the ones that you've just mentioned. So. What's the verdict, Tannis? You said you're on the fence. Have you been convinced?
Definitely.
Okay. And hey, I mean, if this turns into a bill in a couple of years, it'll be time well spent, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, I don't have to go out of my way for it. A lot of them are going to be real easy to get.
Yeah, you just play the game.
That's cool.
Right. And I mean, you just do a skill and kill Yak Track, or even you're just doing Yak Track, you're going to complete it by the time January comes around.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, I just didn't want to grind for a really long time on something that I'm just, you know, I'm sure it'll go up over time, but I feel like that's going to be a lot longer curve, a lot longer hill, you know, a slower route since there's going to be so many.
Well, Black Sand Hat is currently what, 35?
Yeah, but I mean, you didn't have people with 15 accounts making.
Yeah, that's true.
Black Sand Hat.
That's true. You could have multiple people with accounts building these together. So who knows how many there's going to be when it comes down to it at the end of the day. And that raises an interesting question. Do you do it on an alt as well?
I would imagine. Why wouldn't?
Like,
why
I mean, David will definitely do it because you have the main account and you have the Iron Man. But I'm wondering,
I'll definitely get it on both.
Would you do it on Tannis Jr.?
Yeah, I mean, most people's alts are a second main at this point.
Yeah.
I mean, not quite mine, but yeah, I would definitely do it on Jr.
And Tannis, right?
Yeah, okay. For sure.
All right, fair enough. Now, there was also the live stream last Friday. I want to touch on a few things that were talked about in that in terms of just general game direction, in addition to the conclusion of the year and the party hat and the Premier Club and the Christmas Yak Track that's on the way. Now, this was the live stream with Mods Osborne and Stu with Mod Hooli hosting, and they talked a bit about what 2022 is going to look like, and the content mix of skilling, combat, and questing will be included, like it was in 2021. There will be some dialing down of certain things and dialing up of certain things, i.e. dialing down on combat compared to this year, and perhaps bring skilling up higher for next year. And I think we can agree that having back-to-back combat updates starting in July and taking us through October was kind of a bit much, and I feel like it was. David, did you feel overloaded after the end of the four fronts?
Well, no. I mean, it was a new God Wars front, and they decided to release it spaced out rather than all at once. So I thought it was fine. If they had done God Wars Dungeon 2, where they put Vindicta in the game one week, Hellware a couple weeks later,
that would have
been the same thing.
Okay. All right. I think it's different levels of magnitude for this. What do you think, Tanis?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think it's a different... I thought every boss here was a different level of magnitude. They were so diverse.
Four just completely and totally different types of encounters.
Like, just compare the differences between Krosis and Glacier, and then throw Carapac and Zook into the mix as well, and you got four different entire things with this, so.
Yeah, they're all, like, combat-related in a way, you know? I mean, even Krosis in a way. That's a skilling boss. That's like we had continuous combat updates, like big headline combat updates.
And keep in mind, we also had the Matriarchs this year as well, and Raksha last December. So it's been a lot of combat in just one year. I wonder what they could have in store for skilling in 22.
I don't know, because that can go either way. Sometimes you're like, oh, please don't. And sometimes you're like, yes, please.
And for us people who are maxed in 99s and all these skills, we need a reason to train beyond 99. That's not just a cosmetic 120. At least that's how I
feel. Maybe they'll release an update that starts with con and ends with e-work.
Construction rework. That'd be funny.
I mean, there's one cosmetic, Shane, that I think would make a difference.
What's that?
Your virtual 120 max, 120 all.
Yeah. A virtual 120 max cape you're talking about.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, they could do that, but the question is, do you want to set that marker there for skills that don't have it yet officially? I don't know.
Well, yeah. I mean, yes. What's the difference anymore? I mean, we call
people
it a difference.
Do
people see it? That there was a difference? I don't really think so.
All right.
I think every skill is measured by 120 now. I think the days of 99 being the relevant milestone are long gone.
Interesting.
Because XP is so fat. You can max an account from scratch in under a month. So it's really, really the goal of the game, I think, is to get 120s now.
All right. And obviously, that's a certain level of play associated with that. They also say to expect more transparency. More talk about what's being made.
Hey, who's been complaining that we don't know what's being made? Because I feel like they finally hit the right balance.
I thought they have too.
I think it's been perfect.
Like, yeah. I have no problem with waiting to hear about things until they're ready to launch. I don't know what the deal is.
Well, have you noticed there's less time for other forces to screw it up and derail the project?
And there's more ability to manage your own messaging with that, too, which if you start going out sooner, it kind of runs away unless you have a community management team that's effectively driving the discussion, which, let's be honest here, the RuneScape community management team has never been able to do that.
No.
So... next question. Will the Elder God Wars end now? And they say the Elder God Wars dungeon will make its way through to the opening moments of 2022 because, and I quote, there are certain things players expect with Elder God Wars dungeons. That's the fifth boss,
holy
isn't
shit.
It?
Shit. What's the what's
I think
so
it's the fifth
gonna
boss.
Have its own next? It's gonna have its own Telos?
Yeah, I think so.
Oh, that, I mean, you guys got spoiled this year, David. Look at that.
Maybe it'll be a boss that, like, part one is Zuck-like waves, part two is killing boss, and then you have to go kill it.
I actually thought about that, you know, combine the mechanics from all four fronts.
Yeah, but I'm intrigued to see what it would be, because when God Wars Dungeon 2 came out, Telos was by far the most important and relevant long term.
Yeah. And I mean, the way you split this, things players expect with Elder God Wars Dungeons and God Wars Dungeons in general, you can break that down into two bits. The first one is that there's five bosses. The second one, if you're copying the tone of God Wars 2, God Wars Dungeon 2, is a reputation system, which with players who have already gone through the Sentistan related content, I don't think that one makes much sense.
Yeah. So. Plus we need some sort of end game with the eggs. Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Maybe that's what they're referring to.
And that's
to
the next thing. Well. The story about the eggs and the elder gods has to be resolved. And some of this can be done and will be done in content that isn't questing, in particular, the weekly dialogue and other events that happen in game. And they say it will also be important that the player is at the center of what happens with the elder gods. And more likely than not, one of the first updates of 2022 will be related to removing the dual arena, which is going to tie directly into the Elder God Wars discussion that we've all been having since then.
Wait, removing the dual arena is going to be part of
God
Wars?
Yeah. So they're
so
going to
like the Elder Gods are actually just mad about gambling. And once we remove the dual arena, then they're no longer mad at us and won't destroy our planet. Is that what's going to happen?
Actually, it sounds like it's a possibility.
What I think that basically means is that the dual arena we know is on slate to be removed in January, and with that, they're going to replace it with a piece of content that is relevant to Elder God Wars.
Oh, I see. So the area will be reworked.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
It'd be so cool if an egg hatched and just went to the dual arena and just leveled the place.
It would level more than just the dual arena, I'll tell you that.
but again, if they only care about gambling as a sin and nothing else, then it's fine.
Yeah, that would be an interesting story arc. I should propose that to our content group that wrote the end of Elder God Wars in the monthly bit. Oh, they're just upset about gambling. They just want the dual arena and whatnot to be removed. But we knew that. And the question I think that also is sitting in people's minds is, will it be PvP related still? Because the dual arena, going as far back as it has existed, has been a PvP place. So will they do something with PvP, or will it be just something generic Elder God Wars related? That's a big question as well.
Is it really a big question?
I think so.
I don't see any way that that's going to be PvP related.
No, and see, that's the thing. We know PvP content is hard to do, so that's why I think if they did pull it off, it'd be really interesting, but I'm not counting on it.
Yeah.
So
maybe World Event 4.
Oh, boy.
PvP element.
Oh, boy. That'd be something. All right.
That's not impossible.
Strap yourselves down, everyone. We got some news about who the new executive producer is. We don't have a name yet. We do know that they were internal to Jagex, an internal hire, and the new executive producer is from the old school team. And one of the first things he'll be focusing on is transparency and bringing players into the decision-making process.
I really hope we don't go the old school route of every single update has to be pulled. I think that's so obnoxious.
As if we haven't been down this road before, over and over. It's freaking Groundhog Day. This game is Groundhog Day. It goes through cycles. Like, I don't know, Shane. We had a direction.
Yeah.
We were going somewhere.
Yeah.
What stop.
Thank you for the self-censor.
Well, I think being from old school is fine. Tanis, how would you feel about Elder Rune Labs as their first change in direction for us?
No, players aren't game designers. They don't know what they need. They don't know what they want.
Elder Rune Labs. I mean, it's funny because all of the jokes you've made are actual things I could see happening. Like, I don't think are out of the realm of possibility. Yeah.
We need to be just 100% clear with this. That if you do this, talk about transparency, that's fine. Bring players into the decision-making process. Okay, but let's also put some reasonable bounds on this, because we know power to the players was too much. We know Rune Labs was too much. We know what old school does, and they love it for what it is, but that has never been RuneScape's main way of delving up content, and I don't think that is the direction we should go. And I just want to be 100% clear here that if the executive producer is from old school, that doesn't mean that we can blanket make the assumption that all of our updates are going to be pulled. I think that would be a horrible assumption to make. Because there is a level where you can increase transparency and bring players into the decision-making process responsibly, where you're not going the full old-school path, you're not going the power-to-the-players path, and you're not going the Rune Labs path. There is a responsible path to take there, and it's a very delicate line to walk.
I don't know that path, Shane. Their path is to go to r/Reddit. What's there one saying today?
I hope not. And if if that's the case, then
we're doomed.
Then this podcast has an entire different reason for existing.
Well, strap in, buddy.
Exactly. That's why I said to strap in.
Well, I think for me, I like the opposite of this from games. I really like that everything I do is arbitrary in the sense that someone else has designed it.
Yeah.
For me.
Yeah. That's
I like the fact
sense
that
I come from
real life. I don't have to plan in detail and organize everything. It's nice to not have to play that part because I have to do that for my job. So
there
I
you
really
go.
I want to do that for a game.
And, you know, I realize that Tanis and myself sound very curmudgeon-y right now about this, but that's just because we've been down this path before and seen a U-turn of what comes from it. So
we're not goldfish. Like, we've literally done shows. I wrote articles.
We don't want to go back to having players choose what each update is going to be. There can be surveys, there can be maybe the occasional guaranteed content poll, but the players, by and large, should not be determining the direction of the game.
You want another aquarium?
I was thinking about Menaphos.
That one's forgivable, though, because they gave us an incredible land that we had always wanted to see with Drift.
Yeah,
so
that's true.
I can understand the want for Menaphos, but did we need an aquarium? Yeah.
And, you know, I think one of the first things that we'll have to gauge when the new EP arrives and does his inaugural live stream, which will hopefully be in December, is that when it comes to transparency, what exactly does he mean by transparency? Does it mean being more transparent about why decisions are made, or being more transparent about release cycles, or being more transparent about what's being made? Because there's different kinds of transparency you can talk about.
So. Well, and I'm the first to be all over Jagex, but I really don't see a issue with that. The only thing that maybe we should have a little bit more transparency about is, you know, sometimes these mergers and buyouts and selling seem to come out of nowhere.
That's over the EP's head. It's not his space.
So what can they be transparent about? Like, I don't know.
Yeah, and maybe this is a question we need to ask the player base, because we're missing part of the perspective here. David, do you feel as though that they needed to be more transparent about anywhere in the last 2 or 3 years or so?
No, I mean, I think the last 18 months or so have been pretty much perfect.
I mean, is it once again MTX? Is it always that beast?
Do people care about MTX still? I feel like people have decided.
I feel like it's not as big of an issue as it was.
Because I think that most of the people who really were turned off by it either play old school or don't play the game anymore.
Well,
there's that.
I hope so, but I still think we could probably go to a few websites and that would be front page.
Yeah. Yeah.
In one way or another.
And I mean, it's a discussion I want to have. I want to know if anybody out there is listening to this, what would you like to see in terms of when Jagex says there needs to be more transparency? What would you like to see in regards to that? And what would you like to see for RuneScape 3 in terms of the decision-making process? I think that would be a wonderful discussion to have, and I'm eager to hear what people have to say.
For me, I think the only thing is having actual players test new abilities and items that come out.
Yeah, that's not going to happen.
But it probably should, because if they keep releasing items that are clearly way too strong for where the game is, and then they have to nerf them a couple weeks later, or in the case of Greco, like 8 months later.
Yeah.
That just seems like it could be easily fixed by just having some of the people on the combat council, for example, test the item. And I don't really care if
you could NDA them even.
Yeah, and if they know about an ability 3 weeks ahead of time, like whatever, it's fine.
Just NDA them. That solves the problem.
It would solve the issue, because they would test out the new item, realize that it's wildly overpowered, and it won't be released as is.
Yeah. And speaking of wildly overpowered, we've all been talking about God Wars stuff, right? They also said that alongside this, December is going to take another angle at reducing death costs, and this will be part one of looking at death costs and gold sinking and getting that relationship right to make a death as a whole less punitive. So we've had the free death weeks, but there's now going to be something else that looks into this. So,
well, I'm sure we
I'm
have
eager to see what that's going to look like
about that coming up.
Yeah, we do. And I'm going to thank some Patreon supporters. Then we'll go right into that, because that's the whole reason David is here. So this week, I'd like to thank Amos Reed, Andrew C., Arvidzel, Christian S., Chunk the Monk, Cook Me Plunks, Diana, Drama Free, Duramax, L.O. Matey, Free Milk, Jade Gizmo, Jason S., Jeebus, Jesse W., Keski, Lucky Ducky, Nate the Great, Renhawk, Ricky A., Samuel F.L., Scott D.S., Seth W., Singer, Stop Eve, The Bears O.P., The Naked Captain, The Lion, Tom V., and Zant. Thank you, everybody, for your support. This does truly mean the world to us, and I will direct everybody right now to our Patreon at patreon.com/RSBNB, where you can learn about what we do here, and we have our entire back catalog of monthly bits there, monthly bonus shows that we do. Last month's was quite the special about PvP in-game. The next one is actually going to be about what happens now, what happens to Jagex, what happens to RuneScape after RuneScape Mobile. So if you want to hear that, sign up at patreon.com/RSBNB. But of course, if you also just want to sign up, you have a week left from time of recording, probably about 5 days when you're hearing this. If you want to have an RSBNB Christmas card delivered to you, all you have to do is sign up for any of our packages, and you'll get a Christmas card, providing you give us your shipping info. It'll be signed by the production team. And you get that with any of the tiers. So sign up at patreon.com/rsbnb. But of course, we also have the $3 a month tier where you get a VIP rank on Discord and a mention on the podcast at the start of the month. And for $5 a month, you get a shout out each and every week and gain exclusive access to the outtakes that we use to make the clip show at the end of the year. And of course, you're probably wondering, what are we working to? Well, when we reach $200 a month, patrons will receive an exclusive postcard with a piece of custom artwork on it. Yes, we're revealing tiny, teeny, tiny bit about what that is. A postcard with some custom art as a token of our appreciation to show the podcast wouldn't be possible without you guys. And should we ever reach $500 a month, well, Tanis, myself, David, Parnassius, and a whole bunch of other people will subject our taste buds to a whole range of spice. You like how I just roped you in there for that, David?
Yeah, you really did.
And nearly half of the other production team, I love it.
Yeah.
Way to go, Shane.
Yeah, there's people I want to rope in, but they won't let me. But nonetheless,
I think Thaxi should have to do it too, but he has to talk about splintering arrows for the entirety of the challenge.
patreon.com/rsbnb. Thanks so much, everyone.
Thanks, guys.
All right, so death costs. Let's have a discussion about this, and I wanted to come back to this because it felt like last week, Tanis, you and I had a bit of a discussion. We discussed the economics of it primarily, and there was a misconception amongst the audience that we were missing half of the debate, but that was intentional. We were only talking about the economic side of it. Systems is this week.
Mm-hmm.
This week on the live stream, last week on the 12th, Mod Osborne said that they can't just turn these death costs off because it would have too much of an impact on the economy. Timbo is working on this full time and the larger question of RuneScape's economy. And we just mentioned there'll be more experiments in December on this. Now, I want to highlight something that we all want because I think this is important to get down and just showcase that we're all on the same page when it comes to a number of these things. First and foremost, in an ideal world, a PVM experience would have no death costs. I think we all agree with that, right?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Secondly, we need a system that doesn't punish those who are new to PVM, and it doesn't also punish those that are trying to teach themselves new mechanics at a higher level. I go back to our monthly bit we did last December, David, on PVM economics. And back then, you said the number one thing that punishes people from pushing harder on something like Talos is the death system, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
The other thing we need, and this is what we were touching on last week, is you need a whole of economy approach that doesn't let endless amounts of gold be funneled into the game directly or indirectly by alchemizing the trash drops. So the bosses need to take that into account. You also need a system that's consistent within itself, a system where risk and reward is within reason, a setup that gets faster kills solely because of gear should have an extra risk, but it should all be within that consistent system. So that's what we want from a death system. And this has been put together by myself, Tanis, Thaxi. You impacted as well on it, David. And overall, how do you feel going into this discussion here? Like, we discussed this at length on the round table, and I didn't expect it to take 45 minutes then.
It was great, though, because there wasn't a single person who overlapped with someone else in terms of the way they play the game and experience it,
yeah.
It seemed like.
We had the entire gamut of perspectives, which was perfect. Now, just to give everybody a bit of an idea here, you said you were working on Talos before you came here to do the show. What would a death cost there have been for you on that?
Well, that was on my Iron Man. So okay. It's still, relatively speaking, new. It doesn't have anywhere close to a elite high level setup. So my death was about 3 mil.
Okay. Now, let's
lost
pivot
a lot of money.
Let's pivot to your main. What would something like that have looked like on your main? Fully decked
on my main, I think my Telos deaths are about 16 mil.
All right. What about your Solak deaths, for example, if you had to put a price on that?
Depends if I'm hybriding. If I'm on a team that is hybriding, then around 40 to 42 mil.
And this is some of the stuff that we touched on at the roundtables, that you can have these 40 to 42 mil deaths. And I'd imagine that's what, probably a half dozen switchers or more?
Yeah, I mean, it's basically a full setup for two different styles, which has kind of fallen out of favor lately because Magic is so broken that it's actually not even worth it to hybrid. Really, it kind of is, but it's debatable.
Okay.
So, but prior to Magic just getting ridiculous, it was very common to hybrid with a full range setup and full melee setup, because for a boss fight like Solak, Death Swiftness has a cooldown. That cooldown is not shared with Berserk. And so anytime your Death Swiftness is on cooldown, you could switch to your melee setup and use Berserk. By the time your Berserk is up, your Death Swiftness is back. So there's a huge advantage to hybriding for longer boss fights.
Right. And we need to be 100% clear that we also had the discussion at the roundtable, and you verified this for us, that practically any boss in game can be done with tier 80 weapons, or sorry, tier 90 weapons and tier 80 power armor with,
yeah,
say, a shield.
I have personally duoed Virago with a set of full lunar armor and a tier 85 staff, and a tier 70 wand and a tier 70 shield.
Yeah.
I'm not sure that the whole,
like, it's not going to be the most efficient thing you do, but it can be done. And
yeah,
we just highlight that as one option out there when it comes to switch cost.
And I think you just kind of touched on something there, Shane. I think that is a point that we are aware of, but we have a different kind of analysis when it comes to necessity versus efficiency.
Exactly.
You know, it's not that's, you know, wasn't seen, but we kind of just fall on a different line. And I guess it'd be natural. You know, I would look at it in a similar way. If, you know, it was on a scaling side, I would be like, oh, well, there's certain things that you need to have. But at the end of the day, like how you started, we're not fans of death cost to begin with.
Right.
But yeah.
And I personally don't care about the economy. Like, I don't think the economy should mirror real life. That sucks. I'm a person that thinks everything should have a price. But hey, that's a bigger discussion.
Yeah, and that's one
day of
the possible solutions we set out that we'll get to.
I think it's important, though, that a lot of the really high expensive graves aren't people just doing stuff that improves times by 2 or 3 seconds. Some switches genuinely make an enormous difference in the game, and the way that the designers have started building things is towards assuming that people are taking switches. And the introduction of the Essence of Finality in particular is an example of an item that is entirely designed around the use of
switches. In particular, as well, that it can also be dyed and you can have multiple of them.
Right. I mean, the whole purpose of that item is to facilitate switching being easier and better than ever. So they're clearly designing content that assumes players are using switches. And for some of them, it really does matter. So if you were to, you could duo Solak with tier 90 weapons and tier 80 power armor and a shield as your only switch. Absolutely. It would probably take you 18 to 20 minutes. You could also utilize a meta setup and your duos are 7 to 8 minutes. And that's a really enormous difference.
And that all comes down to the profitability of it at the end of the day when you split it apart. And if you have your methods down, I'd imagine your deaths really don't happen that often at Solak.
Yeah. And also just success rate, like a success rate of a meta setup at Solak might be over 90%, whereas if you don't bring those switches and those higher leveled items, then you might fail half your kills. So not only are your kills taking three times longer, but you're also failing them.
And you're adding death costs.
Because you're failing DPS checks or whatever.
Right.
Yeah, it's not even about the death cost because your graves will be cheap, but it's just about you're getting three kills an hour, two to three kills an hour instead of, you know, 8-9 kills an hour. And that's huge for a boss like Solak because the commons are basically worthless and the entirety of the profit comes from rare drops. And so you the only way to even break even is to maximize your chance at a rare drop.
All right. We also need to talk about some of the oddities in the system because these were on display at the round table heavily. In particular, values of certain items just don't make sense, such as that dying some items can make them cheaper to reclaim, or in other cases, much more expensive, which was new to me. Yeah, because of the dyed item forms, and the dyed items have a set cost to reclaim on death.
And I put this in the notes, but a good example of this is the Wand of Appraisal, which to reclaim from death is just under 6 mil GP. But if you die your Wand of Appraisal, the reclaim on death is 27k.
Which doesn't make sense at the end of the
day. And it's not consistent either. So if we look at another item, like let's take Elite Serenic Top, it's 2.66 mil to reclaim, whether it's dyed or undyed. So it's not like dyes universally are applicable for this. But the reason for it is that sometimes the way that death views a dyed item is that it has no GE value, and so it just goes by the ALK value to determine how much it's worth to reclaim.
Yeah,
when it's a 1.2 bill item on the GE, or more than that, 1.7 bill, whatever.
Oh, I wonder if that's what... See, I never had death costs like what you guys would suffer, but I always thought it was stupid because it seemed like you paid a pretty high death cost when you had like untradeable items, like the even the Port Armors, it felt expensive. Or I mean, not the degradable versions, but the kind.
Yeah, just because those are set.
Yeah.
You have other cases where something might be only a 2-3% DPS boost, but is a 10-15% higher death cost.
Yeah, so a great case for this is Elite Serenic, 2.6 mil to reclaim for the top. Regular Serenic to reclaim for the top is 142k. The difference is 34.8 style bonus versus 36 style bonus, which is, for that one item, less than 1%. So you're spending an extra 2.5 mil to reclaim an item that's under 1%. And you could say, well, it's like, don't use Elite Serenic, use regular. But it's kind of silly if you're actively discouraged from using best-in-slot gear, that there's an entire Elite dungeon that was designed around making. It's the only thing that Siriu drops is the scales.
Yep.
And so you've already decided to not give it a set effect, which is probably fine. It might be too good. But you've already decided to basically make it almost identical to its predecessor, but now you're just punishing people because the difference between the two it'd be impossible to tell the difference. Even it probably doesn't even improve a kill time by a single second most of the time, but your death cost just gets huge as a result of using an item that they want us to be using.
You're being punished for being better, effectively, when in reality it just doesn't line up with the DPS boost that it provides. And you know, the same thing can also be said versus two-hand versus dual wielding, because if you are dual wielding, that's more items to take, which means a higher death cost, whereas if you just had a single two-handed weapon, one death cost to account for. And some of the questions about this can also be thought of as well, is that, you know, maybe then there should be, and we're kind of leaning into the solution side of this, but maybe instead there should be a combined weapon cost, so that two-handed and duels are a lot similar in terms of their death costs for a pair. Something to that effect to kind of tie things all together. Were there any other oddities on this list that jumped out at you, Tanis, or is there anything here, David, that is missing in terms of system oddities? Because I think these are the big ones.
Yeah, these are the big ones to me.
Anything, David?
I think this is most of it. But some things are kind of strange too. Like quest rewards have just really high reclaim value sometimes.
Yes.
Like maybe the Asylum Surgeon's Ring isn't the best example, because if you were going to lose it, it would be 500k to reclaim. But at the same time, it seems a little silly to me that a quest reward has a 500k reclaim attached to it.
Right, because you just
every single time you die.
You just go to generally to Maze Quest Caravan, and you can pick up any quest items that were lost.
Yeah. Well,
though I don't know if
ASR
that's the case
is
with
a
the
special case.
Yeah, I don't know if that's
ASR
if,
is a special
if that
case,
falls
but,
in there.
But just generally, some of these quest rewards really shouldn't have. It just seems silly that they have such high reclaim costs.
Yeah. So I'll just add that as a bullet point as well. Some quest rewards. And this raises the question, of course, solutions with this. Do you, for example, tie the value of main hand and offhand weapons together, put them on par with a two-handed set?
I mean, Thaxi's idea is the best, which is just that dual-wield weapons, like when you use dual-wield weapons, your second one counts as a package deal. The problem with that is it might be hard to code if you're using a Wand of Appraisal and a Seismic Singularity. Packaging those together might be hard for them to do. I'm not really sure what the logistics of that would be. And they also would have to make sure not to account for switches. So if you're bringing a Wand of Appraisal and then three different cores with different dies, obviously you can't package four items into one. So I'm not sure what the coding
right. would be. And I think what you'd do in that case is you'd make offhand or the main handle single wheel a little bit less expensive, and then as well make it so that if you combine any, say, tier 90 main hand with a different tier 90 offhand, you wind up with the same price as a tier 90 two hand, and then you can of course fudge the values based on that if you mix and match tiers. And that raises something else that also came up this weekend, is that you want a set of specific costs for certain types and tiers of equipments and supplies. And this will create the expectation that the system is to function within a specific set of rules. So what this means is that if you had a set of tier 90 power armor, the tier 92 power armor would be an expected amount more in terms of death cost, but it wouldn't be the huge number that we talked about just a few minutes ago from going from Serenic to Elite Serenic. Just to give an example. And you can apply the same thing as well, so that if you have a tier 90 magic staff versus a tier 90 melee two hand, why should those two items potentially have the same or have different death costs? That's another thing that could factor right. into that as well. Unless there's something special about it, then you would add a certain value for, say, if it has a special attack, you could add a little bit more to it. Just have a system that is easy to understand, I think. And apply this to all equipment, supplies, tools, practically anything that goes through the death system. And that and that basically creates a system in itself for death costs. Another idea, and this one comes from old school, is that any item worth less than 100k could just be free to reclaim.
I don't think that would change the
No, it wouldn't change much, but it would be a nice olive branch to kind of just put out there.
Like Your fractured staff of armadillo is, you know, an 8 mil item. Obviously, you're always keeping that on death, so you're never paying that 8 mil. But
yeah,
as best in slot gear gets more and more expensive for whatever reason, whether they're hard to get or inflation or who knows.
Yeah, and that raises the question: should best in cost gear be that expensive?
Well, I don't. Yeah, I mean. That we've had a free market system for 20 years, I think it would be pretty hard to just...
Well, I'm not saying set prices. I'm just saying, you know, add more of them into game, which they did a couple weeks ago when they buffed all those drop rates.
Yeah, but, you know, that the staff has gone up since that update, so...
Oh, has it?
Yeah, it sure has, because I think...
How the heck does that work?
Well...
More demand because of the drops or what?
Yeah, so Staff of Armadil, when that update came out, it was about 6.5 bill. Now it's over, well over 7, approaching 7.5.
Okay.
I mean the answer is that it's broken, I guess.
Yeah.
Like that's the answer.
It's a 295 weapon, one of two in the game.
There's a reason that water runes are getting close to 300 GP uh-huh. each, uh-huh. and that's because insight fear is uh-huh. ridiculous.
Uh-huh. I always point that out to people who want to go runecrafting.
Yeah, I wonder how much you would make in an hour of crafting water runes.
Test it out. Another fun thing that you could potentially do is effectively just set a cap on death cost to be determined by what the economics of the situation say. And this could be tied with tiered with soft capping, where death costs decrease as they exceed some potential limit. Like, for example, you might only pay 20% on as much cost past the first 2 million, and you would hit a hard cap at, say, 5 or 10 mil or so. So previously, a 7 mil death cost would only cost 3 now, but obviously, these are just some numbers that we have thrown here together, and it would all have to be determined based on the economics of the situation. I think to me, this is my favorite idea of the bunch, is just to have a cap out there at some amount that's still going to suck the money out of the game, but at the same time, tier that with the system, or combine that with the system we had just talked about, and where everything functioned in a specific way. Another thing that I think might be interesting to do is make it so that the first number of kills on a boss are just free. So when you're going to start off a new boss, maybe something like the first 30 kills have no death cost associated with them, because that's when you're trying to figure out the boss. It could, of course, scale based on the boss at hand. I've just pulled 30 out as a really high number, but I mean, I'd imagine in some cases, like most of the God War stuff, it'd probably be somewhere in the 5 to 10 range. What do you think of that system, both of you?
I mean, it's on par with all the others. You know, I'm more for radical change. Want to overthrow the system and put in a durability system.
Yeah, and we have a question.
What do you mean by durability? You've said this a few times, but is that just like my gear degrades? Because
yeah,
that's just percentage. What's the difference between that and gravestones?
You don't have to run back to get it, so you're never going to lose your stuff.
You wouldn't anyways. They last like an hour now. But
well, regardless, so
it's just the gravestone system, but done automatically.
Yeah, you don't have a gravestone. It would be done how it is, like in New World.
But what's the difference between that and just death costs? Because right now, if you die and reclaim from a gravestone, you're probably losing, I don't know, a couple hundred mil from the durability hit. So,
are you feeling that though in the same way as when you're spending the money, when you're spending gold?
Well, yeah, because you're gonna have to buy Serenic again, or buy Tectonic, or whatever, or I would if my Serenic went from 80% to 60%, I'd feel that I'd feel a lot worse about it than paying to reclaim it for 200k. I guess so here's what maybe this is a better way of putting it. So to take the example of Serenic, to reclaim the item from death costs less than a single scale. So if it took a durability hit of more than a single scale, then it would be much worse.
How many scales does it take to recharge it again?
Is it 48 for the top?
Okay.
28 for the legs, 14 for the helm?
That is a lot. So, with that, I mean, you can see why players prefer the death system rather than the degradation system. And I just need to say, I get where you're going with this, Tanis. And it would have to, of course, be tooled. And we're not just saying go back to gravestones exactly as they are now, because those hurt way more than death cots do. And we are all aiming to have the same discussion at the end of the day, where we don't want to have these huge death cost systems. So the next one is potentially increasing the number of saved items that you get. So, you know, even by 2 to 3 items, you could have something based on, say, perhaps maybe your prayer leveling up, or something that you buy for Moore's Retreat, or maybe even an archaeology relic. And I know this is something we touched on.
Not a relic. I don't want to lose a DPS relic.
Okay, fair enough. Remember we talked about this last December?
Yeah. I think that's an interesting solution. It's still not my favorite, because it still runs into the same issue that it's punishing bringing more items.
But yeah. Or maybe it could be a different prayer that you unlock from somewhere that's a higher protect item rank or something to that effect.
They could look into that for sure, like a protect item that protects 2 instead of 1,
yeah,
and then give us more slots from War's Retreat or something. I think that would be an easy solution, but it would be like, you know, the old slapping a Band-Aid on a severed artery kind of thing.
Yeah. And I think
that's just pushing this discussion down the road.
Exactly. And that's the thing we need to realize with this, is that this entire thing needs to be a whole of game approach, and it can't just focus on PVM. It can't just focus on the economy, and it can't just focus on the death system itself. It's got to focus on the entire economy. And I think that's why it's also taking so long for us to have heard anything on this. But at the end of the day, it's something that I think everybody wants to iterate on. And I feel like what we have just said now is much more coherent than how it came out last week, while still getting most of the same points across. I don't know if there's anything you want to add, Tanis, before we move on.
No, I mean, I guess they could try making everything you have on with no dev cost, and only pay cost on what's associated in your inventory.
Oh yeah, that also came up on the round table, didn't it? That's a good idea.
Yeah, I mean, that would be another possibility.
Yeah. And then, you know, it really would lower the barrier to switchscape as it was, because then you're only penalized for what you're wearing, and if it's in your inventory, then hey, maybe it just doesn't count, or maybe it only counts to, you know, 50 or 40% or so.
I think that's also interesting.
Yeah.
I wanted to pitch my idea.
Oh, yeah. Okay, go for it.
For this has been the same for a long time, which is that one of the biggest complaints right now is rings and having to bring so many. Rex Matriarchs brought in 4 fantastic rings into the game that everyone should be using everywhere. They should encourage us to use them everywhere. 2 of them in particular are super powerful, but the other 2 are also good, and I think that that's content we should be taking advantage of. So I think there should be a system where the Ring of Death is separated from our bodies, and we could pay onyxes in advance to store death. So it could even be much higher. So
yeah, just
instead
pay
of
to
the
death
current rate, it could be you have to spend an entire onyx for your next death or something like that. So you would just like put 30 onyxes on it, and that would be 30 deaths. And onyxes right now are really, really low again. They're back to alc value because of our friend, the Archglacier. And so that would maybe bring onyxes back up, which I know a lot of people really like it when onyxes are high in value. So I think that's one solution too that fixes the most annoying switch in the game, which is that you have to have a third ring in addition to Reavers or Seers and Vigor.
Yeah, and then with that, you could give some other appetizing effect to the Ring of Death as it is right now, and maybe even rename it, because It's something that is almost always there, and an item that never moves from its slot, in effect, ceases being that item. So that's why that's actually a really good idea, David, from a systems perspective. I like that. And it could even be you just pay death in terms of Onyx or something like that. So,
and then one final word is just, I think the reason this is so important is you've docked a lot about the problem with deaths being entry to PVM and learning new mechanics, things like that. But I think that the other two that are sometimes overlooked is, the first is that every boss in the game is designed around a certain level of DPM. So they're very explicit when Nex AOD came out that they designed it around the average player being 140k DPM. That average has gone up a ton because of power creep. And so if they design a boss around, say, 200k DPM or something like that, that requires bringing a certain number of switches. And so if they want to push PVM forwards and design content around higher levels of damage output, then they either need to completely change the direction of the game, which has been about switches. So we talked about the EOF being an example of how game mechanics now encourage switching.
Mm-hmm.
Special attacks being revitalized obviously was designed to encourage switching. So they need to either untether increased damage from switching, or they need to fix this issue, because at this point, it's no longer just a few people who are trying to get world records. Now it's content that is being designed assumes you are bringing a number of switches to encounters. And then I think that's an important thing to know. And then the last thing is just, innovation is really good. Like, people experimenting with new strategies, innovating. I think that players who innovate the limits of the game shouldn't be punished for doing so.
Right, and that's that whole pushing a Talos or Glacier thing we talked about.
Yeah, and the current system is designed to punish taking risks. And I think that as long as the game still runs with I think any video game is more fun when risk-taking is encouraged rather than punished.
Uh-huh. Very true. Very true. Yeah, that all sums this up nicely, and I think it's a good discussion to have. And the thing that everybody needs to take away from this is that you have to look at it from a whole of game approach, the economy, the systems, the death, the PVM, the items, and so on, and so forth, and looking at one item can have the appearance of it as, in effect, going off half-cocked. This was the impression we gave last week when we were just looking at the economics of it. But at the end of the day, it's worth having that discussion as a whole. Tanis, you have anything else before we move on?
Nope. All right. That's it for me.
All right, let's talk about gravestones from Thaxi before we get to God dialogue. So the gravestone system still exists in-game, although it's something that no one uses based on the astronomical degradation cost it applies to your items. Do you think it has a place in the game, and what changes would make it useful again? My thoughts are that maybe they could cut the degradation cost by 75% of the current amount, which would likely make it a discount over death reclaims, although that just does add another complicated factor onto an already messy system. Alternatively, maybe they just design it to work like a death reclaim, but if you reach your gravestone, your reclaim is only costs 70% as much. It's not something that big groups would use when they're on auras and running fast kills, but maybe something for newer solar PVMers as an exchange for gold savings. And is this kind of what you're going for, Tanis? Maybe this kind of idea, shaving off some costs with this?
No, I mean, I'm not trying to go to a gravestone. That's not what I'm talking about.
Okay, so you just want a pure degradation system then?
Just a pure degradation system. It doesn't have to be this astronomical thing. It could be 5%. And I also think that it would be probably more effective if what you were wearing did not suffer the degradation, but what is in your inventory will.
Right. Okay, so that kind of combines all of that together. I'm struggling to think of the last time I actually used a gravestone.
The answer is probably 2010.
Okay.
Or whenever Death came out. When did Death come out? That's the last time.
Too late to save my charming imp, I will tell you that.
Oh, that hurts.
It hurt real bad. Real bad.
That hurts a lot.
Especially back in 2010.
See, I like your degradation idea, and I think gravestones would be an interesting way to go about that, but at the same time, I think gravestones are a duplicate of the death cost system that we have in game right now, and anytime you have more than one system trying to accomplish similar things, you create confusion. And creating confusion leads to more obtuse user interfaces, which at the end of the day leads to more users being frustrated, both from how the system functions and from the UI that they have to interact with. So my general thought for a whole lot of things, and in particular this one, is that simpler is better. And, you know, I can see the choice of, you know, maybe this being good for somebody who's leveling up, but at the same time, I don't think it should be an entirely different system than death. So I think if we were to keep gravestones in game, they should function as was outlined in this question here, where it utilizes the death system, except it's a whole lot cheaper, rather than, you know, having those inordinate sums of degradation hits to Serenic armor, let's say, on that. And, you know, there's actually an argument to be made that gravestones wouldn't be too bad outside of the Elder God Wars bosses, because your graves drop right outside the instance. So that wouldn't be too bad there, but there's a lot of other places where it would become rather messy and icky to handle.
I think the grave system has a place in game, which is that whenever there's a new boss that comes out, watching just gravestone spam into the game is glorious and majestic. And so they should be kept in place.
First it's the Elder Gods eat the dual arena for gambling. Now it's taking joy in people's gravestones.
Yeah, it's beautiful. I don't know if you've ever, on the release of a new boss,
oh, I have,
the gravestone spawn and watched.
I have. I sat watching from the Nodon front as I was doing Slayer.
But and how could you not look? It's beautiful. It's artwork.
I've seen that before, but it was beautiful in a different way, because I'm pretty sure it was Fate of the Gods.
Oh, yes, you're right.
Fate of the Gods.
Also,
that's another good one.
Also, the first Nomad quest.
Oh, yeah. Oh yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that gravestones should be purely cosmetic, because I think that new players don't realize how much worse it is to reclaim their stuff from grave and end up hurting themselves when they
reclaim. You raise a wonderful point with that.
Items from grave, thinking that it's free.
Exactly.
Like, oh, death is charging me 1 mil to reclaim my items. I should go get them for free. And then you're actually paying.
You're taking a hit. Yeah. And that's really not said anywhere with the gravestone.
Yeah, it's total. It's not telegraphed information that collecting from gravestones is a disaster.
Yeah, we need to make that clear. And, you know, that is the number one reason that I would personally like to see gravestones actually go away, thinking about it now. Yeah. But
just make it cosmetic, Shane.
Yeah,
you got to keep the schadenfreude of the gravestone spam.
And, you know, for the new players as well who want to get a discount, this raises such a good question about maybe something does need to be done with gravestones too, because they're just glossed over, but nowhere does it say that your items are taking such a huge hit. And perhaps we just got to go with the option that was put forward in the question here, that you instead just have a cheaper cost associated with them. So
yeah, and to finish up the subject of gaining pleasure from others' death, I really wish more bosses had the Araxor system. You know how outside Araxes' cave, there's a corpse, and it's like this many adventurers have died.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's awesome. I think it'd be so fun if every boss was like had a little dead world guardian outside the cave. All right. This many world guardians have perished today.
All right. Speaking of Schadenfreude, our next question from Trekkie. There's too much money, he says, in our elitist players. They should pay their fair share in taxes. If you were to create a money sink to remove in-game currency from the game, what would it be? People have billions. You got to remove money from their pockets. Maybe we should pull a Caligula, i.e. make super rich people sign a contract that when they stop playing, they give their money away to the state. Obviously, a bit of sarcasm detected there.
You know, in the real world, I'm right with you there, Chairman Mao. But in the game world, and I, you know, David already said it best, it's been 20 years like this, so it's not like it's ever going to change. But I don't care about people's gross wealth as long as I can't manipulate the economy. That's why I wish we didn't have this worry. We have to worry about it every day, living. I hate that we have to worry about it in a game. You know, I wish things did have a value. I mean, they all have an ALK value. I don't, yeah, but
all right, gold sink.
Yeah, gold sink.
I think an incredible example of how to do a gold sink is the traveling merchant. We know for sure. I mean, we obviously don't have data, but we know that the traveling merchant sinks out an enormous amount of gold and from the game.
What do you guys think the biggest thing people purchase on there is?
Livid plant.
Livid plant.
Okay. I always get the gift for the Reaper.
Yeah, that's probably up there too. Gift of the Reaper is more common, so probably more money is spent on that. But Livid plant, Gift of the Reaper are probably the two big ones. Dragonkin lamps, another really good one.
Yeah, because those give you a chance for the effigy pet without doing an effigy, right?
I didn't even know that. I mean, I just get it because you're just buying XP. Like, you just, like, it's just efficient because you could spend X amount of money for the lamp and spend it on a skill that's more expensive to train than that, or put it into agility or something that's not fun to train.
All right. So more things like the traveling merchant then.
I think that would be fantastic. Just, like, put in three or four things that are exactly like the traveling merchant.
Yeah.
I think, like, what was the thing that you threw the money in?
Well of Goodwill.
Water? Yeah, but this one was at, like, the Whirlpool. Fishing place. The Whirlpool. Mm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Whirlpool is another one.
I think obnoxious titles for throwing money away.
Or cosmetics.
Yeah.
Make it about cosmetics. However much you donate to the Whirlpool, you get a cosmetic that levels up.
Yeah, and depending on what day, the title.
And depending on what day you donate, level up different cosmetics.
Yeah, but think about the title, Shane. You could be like Shane, the Ayn Rand. Or what you got, David?
I like the idea of is better than you.
Oh,
just like a gold is better than you title, and it's like 10 billion GP to.
Oh, yes. Yes.
There's
there
a problem
go.
With this, though. And there's a problem with the one I'm going to suggest. My favorite one starts, as you said earlier in the game, starts with con and ends with work, construction rework. The problem with all the gold sinks we have highlighted here is that they are big one shot gold sinks, they're not repetitive gold sinks over time.
But not traveling merchant.
Well, that not traveling merchant, but everything else has been, you know, one shot big over time. Construction rework, the titles, for example.
But, you know, the biggest gold sink, well, no, I guess it's not a gold sink, but we need something that can mimic how invention is an item sink.
Yep.
For gold. So.
Con e-work.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's what they maintenance, maybe something that you had to keep maintenance on it. I don't know.
Yeah, that could work.
Maybe you could, like, pay gold to farmers to do your farm runs for you.
I haven't heard that laugh from Tannis in a long time, and that means it's probably time to move on unless there's any other gold sinks you guys can think of.
No.
All right.
Well, removing alk machines and getting better at cracking down on alk bots, like that's really,
yeah, we do have, like, we do have those. I mean,
that's like the permasolution. The alk machines, assuming inflation is an issue, and I have no idea if it is. Like, right, we have no way of knowing.
And that's the thing, we have an issue. Way of knowing.
We know for sure that alk machines are the reason for it. I mean, it's pretty cartoonish that you could just have alk machines running 24/7.
Oh yeah, I mean, orbs. I forget which of the recent bosses from Elder God Wars drop the orbs, and I had a stack of fire and earth orbs in my bank. Sure, they're good for crafting trading, but price wise, they're below Grand Exchange, so you might as well just throw them in the alker at that point.
Yeah, Zook.
Yeah. All right, let's move on to this week's God dialogue between the four of them, and it appears that Saren has a plan, or at least the beginnings of a plan. We start off this week with the necromancers settling into a holding pattern, and all of the other fronts are actually holding now too, so things are calming down just a bit. You can kind of see the direction Jagex is going here. Armadale brings her logistics update for the week and says that the logistical requirements are at sustainable levels, and there are fewer mouths to feed because of the necromancers. But when it comes to what Saren has said, she says that Gilenor is the perfect world, or the nearest thing to it. As such, it's the ideal seed for the remaking of the universe. And Saradoma just says, then we send them far away, as far as possible. And Saren says that won't work because they'll survive the most desolate void. They can cross planes of reality at will, and they will find their ways back. The next one suggested is, could Gilenor be masked from them somehow? And she says that even Guthix's edicts would have had no effect on an elder god, and there's no easy solution. She must have a think on it. And please do not think of me as complacent. All of my power, my experience, and my knowledge of the elders are committed to saving this world. All of my knowledge are committed of the elders are committed to saving this world. And this is a bit of a shift, because going back to this summer in July, the general sense, even in City of Sintistan, was that Saren might have been on a different side and pursuing a different option here.
I think she's lying, but, you know.
Do we think that she is, that this can be taken at face value, that she is 100% here committed to saving the world?
No, not at all. She has deep-rooted issues from the guilt over her part with Ma and the death of her mother, and views protecting her mother's siblings' offspring as some sort of duty that she has to uphold.
All right. Yeah, I can see that as well. And it really raises the question, would she put forward the, you know, save the world or the elder gods? And here she says it, but the question is, I mean, I don't think anybody in the lore community actually believes her.
Yeah.
So there's that. Also, we get the confirmation from Armadale and Saradoma up front that they are willing to make any sacrifice for this world. And Saradoma even says, there is nothing I will not do. We have had our differences, but I stand ready to support you, Saren, in that we do what we must do. Then there's a final lingering question towards Zamorak, and he relents as well, saying, I will do what I must. And then with this, Saren says, thank you, all of you. Regardless of what has gone before, it is our actions henceforth that will define us. Be ready when the time comes. I will need the support of all of you. So with this, she's basically going to think of a plan. And here she has the three others here on her side now in support.
What the hell has she been doing the rest of the time?
Do we believe Zamorak, Shane? Like, I know that the whole trend has been he's become more kind of caring and stuff each week with the dialogues, but do you believe this? Like, is he going to sacrifice himself?
Just say, out of everybody in this discussion, I trust Saren the least.
Me too.
So with that, yeah. I'm more inclined, if I was to put where this would fall, I'd put Armadale and Saradoma on the same level, Zamorak a little bit below, and then Saren below that. in terms of trust levels.
Yeah, I trust Armadil the most by a lot.
Yeah. So she's going to come up with a plan, and there's the beginnings of a plan. She needs to think about it, and all the other three are on her side. So does this mean that they've been effectively Saren Aurad? This was a discussion in the Clan Quest Discord earlier this week about whether or not these other gods would be able to be affected by Saren's aura that causes everybody to eventually come around to her side. And the initial glance here is that, yes, this is what's happening. But if you go back, I think it was to Desperate Times, it's laid out in a way that says that gods are not able to be affected by Saren's aura.
Yeah, I didn't think so.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think that they can be. And Armadil for sure isn't, because he's been the same the whole time.
Yeah. But from what it looks like here, it does look like they have been aurid, but according to what we've known in the past, unless anything has changed, the gods in this discussion can't be aurid. So take that for what it's worth.
Shane, what does Clan Quest and lore folks think that Zeros' role is going to be in all of this? Because he can't have just vanished forever from the storyline. It seems like too big of a character to just delete.
This goes into our last monthly bit, which you have access to as a Patreon supporter, but I will just provide a bit of a brief overview of this. And what it effectively looks like is that Zaros went to Erebus, the deepest part of the Shadow Realm, with Sarah Doman's crown and the core of Ma to offer something to Voss, which is the entity discovered at the end of the Centistan archaeology mysteries. And what we thought that he was offering to Voss was in a way to try and make him an elder god. And that's likely what's happening on the other side with Zaros and Erebus right now. It would make sense that he would come back at some point, but as to when he appears, I don't know when that will be. We kind of go into it in the monthly bit that was done a month and a half ago at this point.
Gotcha. Okay, I definitely have to listen to that then. That sounds interesting.
It was a fun one to put together, and I think it's one of my favorite ones that we've ever done. I say that every month, though. So, anything else on this god dialogue before we move on?
Nope.
No. Okay. Let's do our picks of the week then. Okie dokie. So my pick of the week is a game, and it's a game that's actually free to play. It's a multiplayer shooter. It is funded by a battle pass system. And we need to talk about this game because this is the first Halo game to launch since 2015, which means the pick of the week is Halo Infinite. The campaign is going to be free to play. The multiplayer is free to play with a battle pass system. And the campaign will be purchasable for the regular price of a AAA game when that drops in early December. And I don't know, it just feels like a natural progression, combines the best of Halo 3 and Reach, and is just a all-round good first-person shooter.
Nice. I've heard good things about it.
Yeah. There's lots of customization to it as well. They're really taking the Fortnite path with Battle Pass and customization of your character as a method of monetization in terms of what you can get. I know a few of us in our group who have been playing it have actually already purchased the premium version of the Battle Pass with it.
Nice.
So, if you are at all interested in first-person shooters, or if you are a Halo fan, this is a game that you need to play. And on launch day, the first couple days it was launched, it was the third most played game on Steam. So that says everything you need to know about it. So that's the pick of the week for me, Halo Infinite. And for anybody who hasn't played a Halo game, it's got the wonderful combination of course, the first-person shooter that you expect, but there's also vehicles in it as well that you get to play around with, too. And that plays a huge dynamic role in the way that the gameplay shakes out. So just imagine any other Halo game except modernized. So I am glad to be able to share this with everyone that it's finally out now. So Halo Infinite is pick of the week, available on Steam, Xbox Game Pass, Xbox, effectively a free-to-play game if you want it to be. So That's my pick of the week. All right, what do you got, Dennis?
I'm going with the podcast this week, and as many people know from some of my previous picks, I am a wrestling fan, and one of the all-time greats is Ric Flair. If you don't know him from wrestling, you probably know him from, you know, professional football players talk a lot about Ric Flair. But he is hilarious, super entertaining, and started his podcast again after some health problems, and it's called Ric Flair Woo Nation. And you can find it, I listen to it on YouTube, but I believe it is probably on all the other podcasting platforms as well. But
uncensored,
you know,
version too.
Yeah, you know, it's his, you know, opinions about people wrestling now and stories about how it used to be back in the day. It's a lot of fun.
All right. Maybe we need to make an uncensored version of RSBNB update.
Well, you have those.
All right.
And then once a year we share the best parts with the
with the community, the clip
with
show.
The community, yeah.
All right, fair enough. David, pick of the week.
Yeah, so my pick of the week is the Canadian Queen's back. Avril Lavigne released a single, Bite Me. I think that signals an upcoming album, and it's great. It sounds just like Avril Lavigne.
That goes back to 2003.
Yeah, it sure does. It's really a nostalgic voice to hear, and I think anyone who has liked Avril Lavigne in the past will like it a lot.
Yeah, it shows some clips of it on the video version, but I don't want us to get dinged for all the absurd monetization stuff that happens on YouTube. But link to all these picks will be in the show notes at update.rsbnb.com. All right, so achievements. We're going to wrap up the double XP achievements, and I'm starting on November 17th with Dr. Reggie, who got 99 crafting. Todio 22 got 99 constitution. Then we move on to the 15th, where Greenyish got 99 farming. Curtains got 99 agility. Max quest points got 99 cooking. And Tanny Kiat got 99 ranged. Then on the 14th, we have Alex 43 with 120 herblore. Free Milk got 99 invention and 99 attack. And Lord Deluxe got 99 summoning. And Uber Plastic got 99 attack.
On the 13th of November, Fritz Krieg got 99 divination. Iron Verse got 99 attack. J1, J2, J3 achieved 120 archaeology. Jamandi 52 got 200 mil agility XP. Max Quest Points got 99 woodcutting and 99 fire making. Shamrock Soup got 99 invention. And Vapor 13579 got 99 mining. On the 12th, Fritz Krieg got 99 dungeoneering. God Shaman got 99 summoning. Max Quest Points got 99 prayer and 99 fishing.
Nicely done.
All right. And then moving on, also on the 12th, we have Tanny Kiat with 99 fletching and slayer. We have The Outdoors with 99 mining, Vapor 13579 with 99 dungeoneering, Zabros with 99 thieving, and then going to the 11th, we have Ollie the Wise with 99 cooking, we have God Shaman with 99 agility, Greenyish with 99 hunter, Nerd with 99 fire making, Tanny Kiat with 99 summoning and cooking, Uber Plastic with 99 fletching, and Underking with 200 mil in both attack and strength. Very nice.
Nicely done. Nicely done. All right. It's been a while since you've been on the show with us, David. What have you been up to on RS?
Yeah, so I've been mostly, so I did some Mainscape double XP. I did 200 mil Herb Lore, and 120 Smithing, and then finished it up AFKing Protein Traps. I'm back to mostly focusing on Iron Man once again, so currently I've been trying to do a lot of Virago to get a Seismic Wand, and then I could try to go get a Fractured Staff of Armadil. And lately I've also been doing a lot of clues. So yesterday I did 50 easies, 50 hards, and 10 elites. So I've been trying to get into the clue meta and figure out efficient routes.
It's good, isn't it? It's good once you learn about that, right?
Yeah. And I actually, I did on my 146th clue, I got a double broadcast. I got a Shadow Die and a Barrows Die in the same basket.
Whoa!
No way!
Which is, so I think that it's the 17th ever confirmed double die.
Oh my god, I wonder what the chances of that are.
I think it's less than 1 in a million. I think. I don't quote me on that.
Did you buy a lottery ticket with that?
1 million to get both.
Yeah, after that?
Shit.
Simultaneously.
Did you buy a lottery ticket?
That was... I did not. But it was pretty cool. So that's why I really need to get a Staff of Armadil, because now I've got a nice Shadow Die that I can pop on it.
Nice. Wonderful. How about you, Tanis? How did double XP end?
The same way it began, with a lot of mining.
Okay, fair enough.
And I'm still mining. That's kind of what I've been doing this week. Just chilling, working on the 120. I've been also playing a lot of Forza Horizon 5.
And oh, yeah.
That's so good. It's so good. doing some mining while I drive, and it's been fun.
Alrighty. As for me, I really didn't do too much double XP. I could just not get into the Slayer end of it. I tell you again, I could not get into Slayer. I did some more Hydrix Dragons, and I saw I was getting 22k Slayer XP per kill or thereabouts.
Mm-hmm.
But I just can't do them. I think those are going to be one after I get the soul. They're going to go on the block list.
I'll be damned.
So
wow,
that, yeah, I mean, they're like one of the best. I mean, if not the best Slayer creature.
I don't know.
You're doing them in an elite dungeon too.
No, I'm doing them in the Shiloh Village dungeon.
Oh, the elite dungeon 2 method is way more XP per hour. Maybe you don't care about that, but
I do. And so I guess
you get to the point of Elite Dungeon 2 where you get to the Hydrix Dragons. What you do is you kill the two Hydrix Dragons, and they're relatively easy to stack up, and then use chins to kill both of them at once. And then you teleport out, and then you go back to the dungeon, and you just keep repeating that over and over. And it's right around 2.5 mil XP per hour.
Yeah, and see, that feels more tedious than just sitting and camping in a dungeon, so maybe next time that comes up, I'll have to give it a go.
It is, but 2.5 mil XP an hour is pretty
insane.
Yeah, and I don't know what it is. I just can't build a good list of tasks that I get, and,
We should talk about it sometime,
because yeah.
I've done a lot of Slayer across two accounts, and I've done very different styles of Slayer training. Okay. So
yeah, he doesn't like mine.
Maybe I can help.
Yeah, I don't like Tanis.
He might like your style.
So we'll see. But aside from that, woodcutting as well. Just like you said, go back to what we know during double XP. But since then, I have begun the grind on the Blessed Flask. I'm at 2,000 out of 40,000 extra fine sand.
Nice. I would love to be able to convince myself to do that, because it's really nice. We like finally have a piece of content where it's actually really useful.
Yeah, you're talking about Zuck, right?
Yes. Yeah. A particularly hard mode, I would really, really like it, but oof, that's a tall task.
Yep. And, it came down to the fact that I could be using, I had to use penance through all my Zuck runs in order to, in effect, do it effectively, I found, rather than, loading up on the prayer potions and whatnot. But I'd like to be able to switch off penance and have the Blessed Flask for that. So that's what's pushing me in that direction. But that's what I'm on until Yak-Track comes about, and we'll see how far I get between then and then the next 4 days or so. Because, you know, it's largely AFKable. All you do is basically sit in the Menaphos VIP area, click the rock every, you know, 30 seconds or so, and then set some keybinds up on your action bar to drop the 1 and 2 kilogram sand. And then every time your inventory fills up, just grind the rest of them. That's what I'm doing. I'm grinding 5 and 10K on mine. So, but that's what I've been up to on RS. And I'm eager to see where these sorts of things go. But we'll be back next week to discuss the anniversary quest, the beginning of the Golden Party Hand Hunt, and of course the new Yak Track. If you want to subscribe to update, you can do that. Just check us out on anywhere you get your podcasts. That's Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google, Amazon for your favorite Amazon A and E devices, Pocket Cast, Stitcher, and of course YouTube at youtube.com/RSBNP. We unveiled our new YouTube channel trailer last weekend that people seem to enjoy. So if you're not subscribed yet there on YouTube, give us a like and subscribe on YouTube at youtube.com/RSBNB. So with that being said, we'll be back next week for another episode of RSBNB Update. See you then, everyone. Take care.
See ya.